This is the Last Minute Blues Podcast with Jeff Burton, Donnie Fandango, and former Blues defenseman Jamie Rivers.
It is another episode of the Last Minute Blues Podcast. Donnie Fandango, Jeff Burton from 105.7 The Point. And what a tremendous... We got a guest again this week.
So great.
And the guest situation here so far has been pretty solid, so we're keeping that up.
Yeah.
From 101 ESPN, voice of the St. Louis Blues, Joey Vitale. Joey, what's going on, man? Welcome.
Boys, I've just been waiting for you to ask me. I mean, it took a little long, but I'm finally glad to be here. I'm a little nervous. This is a big deal for me.
Oh, dude, don't be
nervous.
We're going
from a talent thing, so it's like, you know, Kerber, you know, whatever. And then Ferrario, we're going up, and now here's the apex, right?
There you go. Oh, don't tell Curbs that Alex was above him. That would disturb him.
I would see the master and apprentice thing there, man.
Like, I love the little bit of tension that you guys throw around in that studio in the booth. I think it's so great.
We get bored sometimes. I mean, it gets a little stale, so we got to kind of get that locker room vibe and going again. We got to pick on each other, and Alex seems to be the scapegoat lately, but it turns. It goes in waves. Sometimes Kerbs is all over me, and sometimes I'm all over him.
How long did you know Chris Kerber before you guys started working together?
Not at all. The
Not
first
at all.
Time I met him was when I, you know, so when the Blues vacated that spot with Kelly Chase stepping down, I got a call from Andy Strickland. He said, hey, this is opportunity maybe for you to check out. I know you just retired. And he's like, here's Chris Kerber's number. If you're interested, call him on the phone. We met over there at the Oyster House downtown and had some oysters. And that was the first time I've ever met him. I heard his voice, of course, all growing up on the radio, him and Kelly. What a team they were. But the first time I ever sat down and talked to Chris Kerber was my interview.
So did you not even have an inkling of this is what you wanted to do until Strickland got a hold of you and said, hey, or had you put the feelers out that you wanted to do something like this?
Never. I mean, I never even thought about this, be truthful. And, you know, I did some radio stuff in Pittsburgh with Phil Bork. We did a radio show together every now and then at the casino downtown where I would be his guest. And I think it was called like Along the Boards with Phil Bork or something along those lines. And so I enjoyed that. But I went to school for journalism, of all things, too, so I kind of had a good education from a journalistic standpoint. In Boston, it was a great city to do all that stuff. But no, I had no experience. I never, ever would imagine I'd be in this position. I never had any inkling to try. But I got to meet Kerbs. And the thought of getting back into hockey was cool because I missed the game so much.
Right.
And any player will tell you, with hockey, you never have to grow up. You can just be a kid forever. And that's what I loved about it. And that's when I got away from the game. I was like, oh my God, like, what is this 9-to-5 thing? Like it's June. Why are people still working? I'm like, don't people take summers off? Like, I don't understand this.
Well, you know what? Let me ask you this. And first of all, it's going to sound like I'm blowing sunshine up your skirt, but I was a huge, and still am, a very, very big Kelly Chase fan.
Yes, same.
There was a point in time when I would describe him as the next Jack Buck, as far as if you have an event that you want a speaker at, somebody who can tell stories, make you laugh, make you cry, be serious, be not serious.
Yeah.
So you're first game, and I just got done telling you this, Donnie, I sat in my car literally with my arms folded and said, all right, win me over, buddy.
Right.
Let's do this. Yeah. And it took less than a half a period.
Well, and that's the thing is there was – I love the radio call of sporting events. I always have. Jack Buck and Mike Shannon were huge influences on me growing up. And so the beauty of telling the story on the radio is still very important to me. And I loved Kerber and Chase.
Yeah.
Like, loved it. And I was very much the same way. So what is this Vitale guy?
Yeah, who's this guy? He thinks he could play some
guy?
Okay, so he played hockey. He's from St. Louis, so they gave him the job for that. And I listened. I went, oh, damn, that's really good.
And you guys are so – and that's what – I'm so shocked to know that you guys didn't have a relationship prior, like that you didn't know each other, because it sounds like you have known each other for a very long time when you're doing those games.
No, I appreciate it. No, again. And we never have, and we get off the rails so much. And we have a lot of just small personality quirks in common. Like, I like old music. I like old movies. He's obviously into the old movie scene. His personality from a standpoint about talking about goofy things, we get so off the rails during games, and I know sometimes we probably got to hone it in, but I think our personality is just kind of, we have a little bit of that ADD in us where we come on a thought and we'll just take it for a while. But Kerbs is such a professional as far as he helps me reel it back in. Or if he knows I'm going down a bad hole, he'll pull me back a little bit because I have a tendency of doing that. But coming in for Kelly Chase was super, super intimidating.
I
remember Kelly's voice. I mean, it was insane. And what you said about him speaking around town, he just has such a charisma about
him.
You mentioned how you can make you laugh and cry all in the same sentence. And I'll be at dinners with Kelly, and he's talking to me about something, And you're right. You're in stitches. You're laughing so hard. And then a minute later, you see him start to welt up. Like his eyes get watery because he's talking about something very emotional and tough to him. But he has that wide range. And I think that's what's made him so good and what's made him such an ambassador here in St. Louis.
So for the people that we just assume that everybody knows who Joe Vitale is.
Yeah, we probably should go to a backstory of some kind.
So
maybe.
St. Louis dude, CBC grad in 04. Then you played, was it the Junior Blues? You have a championship with the Junior Blues, right?
Junior Blues won a national title there. It was a few state cups at CBC for high school. And then I went off to juniors and then college and just kept on going.
And you get drafted by Pittsburgh.
Yep, back in 05.
Then you get traded to Arizona.
Yep, played for Pittsburgh for 6 years and Arizona for three.
And then I'm going to ask you trivia about yourself. Yep, you were traded to Detroit.
Yeah.
Do you know what player you were traded for?
I'll never forget it as long as I live.
You know who?
No.
Oh, yeah, Pavel Datsyuk. Have you heard of him?
Hey, man.
You ever heard of him?
The big guy.
Dude, that's amazing.
That's crazy.
Now, I don't mean to bring up... So, wait. So, was that when Datsyuk went back to Russia?
So, yeah. So, what happened was, it was July 1. I think it was right around the draft. And I'm watching golf in my house here in St. Louis. And all of a sudden, I see on the ticker on the bottom, NHL trade. And I knew there was trades kind of happening. And you're kind of paying attention. And then I see Arizona Coyotes and starts to scroll. I'm like, oh, okay.
Uh-oh.
And I'm like, forward. I'm like, ooh, I know this guy. And then I see Joe. And I'm like thinking, and like slowly, I'm like, okay, I don't know a lot of Joes. Yeah. And then it says Vitale trade. I'm like, whoa. And I'm literally watching. And it's all in slow motion. I'm like, for who? And it said Joe Vitale traded to Detroit. Whatever. I'm like watching the whole thing. And it said Pavel Datsyuk. I'm like, whoa. Like, I know I'm dealing with a lot of post-concussion syndromes right now, and I've been on these painkillers for probably like a year, but this is just too wild. And my agent called me literally like 10 seconds later. Alain Waugh, my local agent.
Oh,
here.
What a great guy.
One of the best.
Oh, he's a great guy. He's a goalie for the Vipers back in the day, roller hockey team. Yeah.
Yeah, Ivy League guy,
that
super
guy,
smart.
To this day, when I see him at Enterprise, we'll give a wave to
him. He's
each
the
other.
Best. Oh, great. Slick guy. Hair and all.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
Al was one of the best.
Yeah.
Smooth, but hey, Joe, it's Al.
Yeah.
Just, you got traded. I go, for who? He goes, well, Pavel Datsyuk. I'm like, how is this possible?
Yeah.
So you're right. You're right, Donnie. So he quits. He goes to Russia. So what happens when you quit and you move, obviously the team doesn't need to pay you, but it still hurts against their cap. And he was making like $7 million at the time. And what happened in Arizona was Don Maloney, the GM there, we were under the cap floor at that point. And you get penalized if you're under the cap floor. So they needed like $8 million to get above that floor. So they absorbed the Datsyuk contract in that trade, so the Arizona didn't get penalized. They don't have to pay him a cent. Obviously, it frees up Detroit, and I think the Arizona Coyotes were like, hey, we got this like schmuck who's on IR from concussion, and we're paying him like $1 million. You mind just picking up that contract in good faith?
And I know that you've been asked this question before, and I know you've told the story a million times, but for the people who don't know, talk about the fight that happened that gave you this concussion, because as a broadcaster dealing with players now that are going through concussion, you can speak on this because you got first world experience.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. So my second year in Arizona, October 2015, season just started. You know, I was healthy scratch for a few games there, which, you know, any player will tell you is just not a fun place to be. And I remember watching the games and knowing just when I get my opportunity, I just want to go. And so I get out there, we're playing the Boston Bruins, and I remember that moment. I just, you know, for a player, it's like so much of your pride is on the line when you finally get back in the lineup. You want to prove something to yourself, obviously your coach, your teammates, your family. You want to stay here. You want to belong here. I was 29 at the time. I mean, that's old in hockey. And I know for my agent was kind of telling me some rumblings that, hey, they may trade you. They may send you down. I mean, there's a lot of this stuff going on in my mind. And I'm thinking, I got three kids. I don't want to move across the country playing the minors. And my wife and I are going to be together. I mean, all this stuff goes through a player's mind. Playing the game, Boston Bruins, Kevin Miller goes after Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who was our captain at the time, Swedish defenseman, all-star. And I remember just thinking, like, here's my opportunity. I asked Char to fight early in the game. I asked McQuaid to fight early in the game. I mean, I was literally like a caged lion. I would have fought anyone that night just to get back in the rhythm of things and prove to my coach that I belong here. Those guys didn't ask to fight me, or they said no way. They kind of laughed at me, which I understand.
Char's got no reason to fight you.
No reason to fight me. And again, but then Kevin Miller kind of cheap shots Oliver Ekman-Larsson. I step in, we just tangle and we just go. I remember my grip was terrible on him because I grabbed him right by the shoulder and the jersey, and his jersey splits. So right from under his chin, it splits by like 6 inches down to his chest, almost like his pec bone. And I have no grip. And so we start swinging. I clean him up a couple times at the beginning, a couple hard rights, but then I really have nothing I'm holding on to, and he's got me so good. And he pulls me in and throws at the same time two punches right at the end. It was pop, pop. And I knew right away something was wrong. I mean, my ears just blew up like a bomb. What happened was my face went initially really numb. I'm going to the penalty box. I would not go down, and I thought my contact was loose, like in my left eye. Mm-hmm. So I go to like fix it, and I literally like feel the top of my eyeball. So my orbital floor collapsed. My eye had dropped. My temple fractured, and then he like basically shattered my jaw on the second punch. So my whole face is just blown up. I'm in the penalty box, and I remember Oliver Ekman-Larsson was in there with me, and he's looking at me, and he knew right away, like, "Are you okay?" And I wasn't responding. And of course, he tells the timekeeper what's going on. Play's going on, and they blow the horn, and all the fans and the players and coach like, "What's going on?" And they basically, Oliver helps me across the ice, and I just collapsed in the hallway. And that was,
I didn't know you collapsed.
Yeah, no, I mean, I collapsed in the sense that I just kind of grabbed my trainer and he just dragged me to the room, and I just completely broke out like in tears. Like, I just knew at that point something was severely wrong. I've never been hurt like that before.
Right.
But talk about a recovery, man. It was insane. It was concussions. It was dealing with broken bones in my face. I was on a lot of painkillers because of that, a lot of opioids because of the pain management of that. And then, you know, that was another struggle in itself, getting off of those opioids because of all the injuries. Because then you start to think, now my head hurts. Is it because my injuries? Because of my concussion? What am I doing? And then I wasn't sleeping good. I mean, meanwhile, we just had our third baby. We're in Arizona. My wife, literally, who saved my life, I mean, she did everything. And it was a 1.5 year just complete valley in my life.
Do you still have a lot of symptoms from it or no?
You know, I wear these glasses because the biggest thing now why I really couldn't go back to play hockey is I have an eye injury similar to what Al McGinnis. You know, Al McGinnis, I think, took a stick or a puck to the eye. My thing's the same thing. I have a little bit of a my eyes aren't synced up. So my left eye, when it healed a little bit lower than my right. So your eyes want to see equal. And mine, of course, don't. So now I have these special lenses and these prisms in there to kind of bring my left eye vision up a little bit so I don't get headaches and I don't get nauseated when I'm watching things.
Question, you're a 10-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. And you're, what age did you start playing hockey?
I think I was 6.
Okay, you're a 6-year-old kid. You've been playing for a year. Now you're 7. And somebody comes from the future and says, this is what's going to happen to you. You're going to be a professional hockey player.
Yeah.
You get to play with the Pittsburgh freaking Penguins.
Yeah.
But here's how your career is going to end. You do it anyway.
Bingo, man. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, in some ways it's kind of cool. I mean, now I can say this, but going out like blades of glory like I did, you know, fighting, you know, obviously there's no easy way to retire. There's no easy way. I mean, players who either get hurt, maybe they don't make a team, they get up and down from the minors, they go to Europe. Anyone will tell you, eventually you have to take a big piece of humble pie and you will get that and it does hurt no matter how you leave the game. I left it fighting. You know what? I wouldn't regret it for a second. Going after protecting a teammate. Kevin Miller, actually, we've kept in great contact since. He's a terrific dude, unbelievably connected, well respected and liked in his team in Boston, and we keep in touch. He's a solid guy, and I think it was good for him because he was dealing with a lot of. I mean, you think of me all the time, but sometimes it's when you hurt someone like that. I mean, there's some repercussions for players,
sure,
so he had a lot of healing to get through as well.
Yeah,
so
he's going, hey, I ended Joey's career,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
And you're certainly not, you know, looking to do that. You're just trying to play the game. You're just trying to be the best guy that you can. Do you kind of see this? There's obviously way more attention now to CTE and to these mm-hmm. kinds of injuries than beforehand. Do you feel like sort of that stigma is going away for players that they're able to step out and go, hey, I'm not right.
Yeah.
I need to get looked at. Or do you think that mentality is still kind of dominating? Like, I don't want them to know. I got to get back
and
in there. I don't want to listen.
I'm indestructible. All that.
Some of that, or even all the I don't want to lose my gig. Mm. I got this guy behind me. That sort of thing. Like, because there's got to be a little bit of both, I would assume.
Well, Joey's story was, hey, I finally made it back on the ice. I'm going to stay here.
Right.
And that's what caused the problem.
Yeah, exactly right. There is, I mean, to me, hockey players will always have that kind of warrior survival mindset where they don't care what they need to do, but they will stay out there. I don't think we think of the long-term repercussions of the actions that are in front of us. We look at this hockey game as a very short window in our life, and we are in our prime from 20 to 26 if you're lucky. And if you make it to that level, you're even luckier. And then when you get there, you don't want to leave. It's like going to the nicest steakhouse and getting the nicest piece of meat and then getting sent down and then going to Pizza Hut. Going up and down from the minors is no joke. And when you get to the NHL, you want to stay in the NHL.
Yeah.
Players will go through walls. Players will fight. They will do things so uncharacteristic of themselves and they'll look back over their years after it and think, what the heck was I doing? Why didn't I step up and say something? I had so many times where I thought, why did I play in that game? Like, I clearly wasn't right. I'll never forget when Wisniewski, I fought him at Columbus. And this guy boxes in the summer. He punched me so hard in my nose, it just split my nose wide open. And I remember just so being so foggy the next day, next 2 days. And I remember how on edge I was for weeks after. I was actually in my coach's office a week after this, and we were kind of breaking down film. And I remember having so much anxiety as he was critiquing one of my plays, and I felt my heart just race. I knew something was not right with me, and I literally threatened to crawl over the desk and punch out my coach. And I said that to him. I'm not going to say the coach's name, but I remember him showing. I go, if you show me that clip one more time, I'm going to sucker punch you in the face. And he goes, you're going to sucker punch me in the face?
Whoa.
This is a coach in the National Hockey League. Wow. I knew something, like, yeah. I knew I was so on edge all the time, and I wasn't clearly right in the head. And then that's when you start. And then obviously when the painkillers, and which back in the day, 20 years ago, trainers would just hand out like candy. I mean, it's just the way it was. Yeah. Now that's a lot more sanctioned than that, which is good. But it's a scary world, and I don't know if that really quite answered your question.
Oh,
but,
my gosh, yeah.
But, yeah, you do anything. And then when you have a family and kids, you want to stay there. You got to make money. You got to support them and provide for them. And again, your window is small, and you play injured. You play through everything.
I was thinking about this the other day when I was watching the Blues game. I miss a good fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I missed it, the game being as physical as it was when I kind of fell in love with the game. But at the same time, I feel guilty because I think about the guy that's getting pummeled in his skull for my entertainment.
Right.
What do you think about where fighting is in the NHL right now? Do you want to see it gone? Do you wish there was more? You know what I mean? What
no, I hear think? You. No, you know, it's scary to think that, you know, obviously boxing is very violent. UFC is very violent. But you think about their protection, like their hands, and they have padding on the gloves. Hockey is just literally knuckles to knuckles. I can't express, and I've been hit by boxing gloves. I've been hit with UFC gloves. Getting hit with a knuckle is so much worse, and it's just so much more intense. And here we are watching these players literally trade knuckles at their skulls. And I know with all the head injuries and how the league is hammering down with high hits and all this stuff, at some point, I think hockey will eventually be out of the game. But I love it still. I really think it's important for the game. Do I like the stage stuff? I've never liked the stage stuff, and I don't like the stage stuff. And I'm with Paul Bissonnette and Cam Jansen last night. We're here having dinner in Louis as all the Spit and Chicklets guys are in town. And they're talking about the same thing. I mean, these are two stage fighters back in their day, and they both agreed that the stage stuff maybe doesn't have a place in the game anymore.
Wait, what do you mean by stage? Are you talking about like, hey, I'm going out there just to fight you?
Remember like the old days, Kelly Chase, he'd come on the ice, and you know, you'd see Bob Probert. They're playing the Detroit Red Wings. It's the first shift, and you just knew. This is my role. Okay, we're going to fight. This is what I do.
It wasn't a fight because you just hit that guy and here we go.
Exactly.
I'm going out there to do that.
Yeah, and like go back to what Vince Dunn did to Jacob Trouba for the New York Rangers about 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. At the end of that game, slash, whack, whack, cross, emotional, boom, they go. To me, that's that passionate, responsive fighting. I think hockey could still have that. I like that. I really appreciate that. I think it could help with momentum swings in the game. And I think if two players need to just hash it out like brothers, then just let them beat the crap out of each other for a little bit. But it's that stage stuff. It's those big heavyweights that you don't really see a lot in the game anymore. I think the league has done a great job as far as kind of like getting rid of that a lot. And because you just don't see a lot of stage fights anymore. Because that's what a lot of the anxiety for these fighters came from. Sleeping the night before knowing that we're playing the Vegas Golden Knights and Ryan Reeves is going to be in the lineup and he's going to ask me to fight in first shift. I mean, that was scary stuff. And I think fighters still go through a lot because of those moments of sleeping.
And to your point, Ice Guardians, what an amazing movie. And,
oh,
and for anybody
great?
Who knows of the movie but hasn't seen it, it's not 2 hours of montages of people beating the crap out of each other.
Yeah.
It's the psychology, it's the mental behind that's what you know you're going to do that night.
It's scary, man. I'm telling you. And I've cheap shotted players throughout my career. And I'll never forget hitting Daniel Briere and Grossman when Pitt and Philly were having these like huge, great rivalries back in the early 2000s. I knocked both those players out, and this was like the last regular season game before playoffs. And we played Philly in that first round. And I remember Jody Shelley. Jody Shelley's, you know, in town during the alumni and the All-Star festivities. Now he's broadcaster for the Columbus Blue Jackets. Jody Shelley, Zach Rinaldo. I mean, I remember trying to fall asleep that night. And I just remember my heart would not stop. And this is what these fighters did every single night. I mean, imagine like going to school and knowing the bully, you and your bully are going to have a fight. I mean, that's one thing. Oh. But these fighters, I mean, when you go on the stage in the NHL, you're doing it in front of 18,000 people.
Yeah.
You're fighting in front of millions of people watching. Your family's watching. I mean, and now with YouTube, if you get your ass kicked, I mean, it's real deal, emotional, heavy, weighted stuff on your brain all the time. And this is why these guys never slept. I don't know how the fighters like Kelly Chase, Tony Twist, I don't know how they did it.
It's when we hear athletes talk like this,
mm-hmm.
it when I hear people say things like, well, he makes X amount of dollars a year, he should just be able to get up and... They're friggin' people too, goddammit.
Yeah, like, yeah,
and I don't think that we always have that part as sports fans locked in. I think the normal ones of us do, but I think some people just don't. You know, they think that the fact that you're making $1 million a year is supposed to make you sleep okay, even though you know in a 300-pound beast is waiting to...
It still hurts when you get your orbital bone knocked
no
out.
No kidding, man.
You know what I'm saying?
And no you're gonna, kidding.
And like you said, man, there is years and years and years of repercussions for what you did just to prepare to be a hockey player.
Yeah, it is crazy. And, you know, I'm still kind of recovering, I think, from a lot of the stuff from my body. But you know what? You're right. It's those fighters and what they did, the amount of respect. But that's why, you know, you see Kelly Chase around town, and he's got this amazing presence. I mean, what he had to go through on a daily basis when he was playing the National Hockey League, I mean, if that just doesn't build the most character out of you, I just don't know what does. I mean, the fearlessness, the courage he had to play with night in, night out, just getting his brains knocked in. And he wasn't the biggest guy. He wasn't the biggest fighter in the league, but he was a pit bull.
Would not turn anything down.
He was a
pit
bull, though, man. Yeah, and it was pretty incredible. Tony Twist the same way. But that's why these guys just have so much gumption when you talk to them. Yeah.
Well, because back in the day, man, those dudes would fight every game, right?
Every game.
I mean,
every
it would be every game that they would fight.
Yeah, every game. Or multiple times a game.
Couldn't even imagine.
Yeah. Wasn't Twist's mom like a boxer or something like that,
I remember that.
I read that she was a boxer or something like that. Just to watch the old video of Twist just throwing haymaker after haymaker.
Dude, it's unbelievable.
I mean, I watched one the other day, which is weird because I'm not that guy, and it was like 18 punches before the guy finally fell down.
Dude.
So ridiculous.
What? I remember watching Cam when he first got here for us, and I'm like, this dude just keeps going and going
waving
and
off the
going.
Refs.
Yes,
and I just couldn't even believe it. Okay, so I want to change up the topic just right quick.
Okay.
Three guys from St. Louis, all right? Born and raised Blues fans. We are at a point in the existence of this franchise where we have gotten the Winter Classic, won the Stanley Cup. The All-Star Game is here for the next 4 days. I feel like I just keep having pinch me moment after pinch me moment with as Blues fans.
Yeah.
You see Tarasenko get injured in the first month of the season. Ah, that's okay. That's all right. We'll still whoop ass until the All-Star game.
No big deal.
Do you guys have that too a little bit? Like, do you still can be like, man, I can't believe that this is happening. I just want to enjoy every single freaking second.
Well, before we get to the guy that watches every single game, I will say, and the same thing I said to Kerber and the same thing I said to Alex, was that I don't fear a 2-0 deficit in the first period anymore.
Yeah.
I don't fear a 2-0 deficit halfway through the second period anymore because I know they can do this. A lot of that has to do with the scoring, but to me, it's always been about the goalie with the St. Louis Blues. It's always been we're a goalie away. It's always the playoffs are made for the team that has a goalie that can steal a game for you, and now we have at least one, if not two.
No, we do, and I remember, like you were saying, I remember the emotion, and I'm only 34 years old, so I haven't even experienced the entire time in this franchise of all the letdowns, but I'll never forget when Steve Yzerman scored that goal in Game 7 on John Casey from the blue line. And I remember crying to my mom and dad's room. I think I was like 11 years old at the time. I was
sitting at a bar legally. Great. You were 11. I was sitting in what is now Bobby's place, as a matter of fact, out in Valley Park. Yeah.
Right on. But bawling. Yeah, I was bawling.
I probably was too.
But the weight, I think the weight on our shoulders of just disappointment after disappointment, a goalie away, as you just mentioned there. And finally, we're there. We got it. The pieces are together. We're not, you know, you're only as strong as your weakest link. And right now, we just don't have any weak links. We got the coach. We got the goal. To me, those are the two most important things for this team right now. But then you got the identity and the makeup of the players. And I'm with Wayne Gretzky the other day, and some kid asked him, who's your favorite player on this Blues team? Who brings you to the edge of your seat? And this is the greatest hockey player of all time. And he said, Braden Schenn. And he said, because Braden Schenn works, he's a worker, he plays defense, and to get back to my point of coaching goaltender and the identity and the characteristics of this team, when you have Braden Schenn and Ryan O'Reilly down the middle, that's the strength of your forwards. And these are two guys that are committed to playing a 200-foot game. And when you have that, you're going to have good teams. And I think that every piece right now for the St. Louis puzzle is in place. You mentioned Vladimir Tarasenko. When we get him back, we're going to even rise to a whole new level. Sammy Blaze on the bench, kind of waiting around, probably another 2-3 weeks for Sammy Blaze to come back. We have bodies coming back. Right now we're healthy. We're getting the goaltending. To your original point, this is the best time, I think, in the franchise history to be a Blues fan. It just, to me, does not get any better than this. I can't imagine it getting any better than this. And by saying that, I should put an asterisk there because there's really nothing stopping them from
making
a cup.
Thank you, because there's a window here, isn't there?
Oh,
there is a window.
3-4-5-year window at least.
Yeah, and Tarasenko, do you have any? I know they don't. I know Vladimir doesn't call you up and say, here's where I am, but as far as recovery, but is there? Have you heard anything?
The only thing I will say is he was skating. My son had a tournament out in Centene this past week. He was on the ice with Sammy Blay, so he's moving his feet. He's back out there. Now, he wasn't shooting a lot of pucks. He was actually using his one hand a lot. So to me, he's still a ways away. But, you know, the good news is we are in mid-January. We still have two and a half months before playoffs. Can he make a realistic comeback? I think so. I don't know the extent of his shoulder injury. I don't have any more details than that. I do know that this is your franchise sniper, and the Blues are going to be very smart about this, and they're going to use him only if they absolutely need to, and he is close to being 100% healthy. He's a player not like me, not like Cam. If we're 60%, we're going to say we're fine. Vladimir Tarasenko is a franchise guy. He was a machine. He was tough as nails throughout the playoffs last year. They want him to be that, and they don't want any more setbacks because you're looking at the long term of number 91.
I think if you maybe have a hard time loving this team, which I don't understand, and we can't be friends.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. If you follow me on any social media and you don't like the Blues, unfriend me.
But when the whole thing against the Rangers, when the Blues together are standing at center ice, watching those bastards go back to the bench, I wanted to headbutt my TV. Yeah. Like I was so into you guys beforehand, but that just team thing, like, you're going to do that kind of shit?
Yeah,
well, then
you're
going to deal with all of us and not just one of us. And if you remember a few years ago, there would be times where you would feel like somebody would take a run at a Blues player and we would complain like, man, there was no answer back for that.
Right.
Well, now, goddammit, there's answer back. Well, and it's amazing, man.
Yeah, and it's amazing you say that because where that comes from, of the team watching the New York Rangers leave the bench, people are like, what a team. Boy, they're together. To me, that starts for this team on the road and the relationships with each other outside of hockey. This is a very tight group. I've been on teams where it's been very clicky. Maybe the Europeans go off one way for dinners, and the Americans, there's the young guys, there's the old guys. Everyone is lumped together, and credit to Alexander Steen and these leaders like Ryan O'Reilly who just bring everyone together. They're like a family. They're very close. We went to Western Canada, I think, in November. We had a 3-game swing all through Western Canada. We went from Minnesota to Vancouver. Because of the time change, I think it was daylight savings time, we took off at 11 o'clock at night in Minnesota. We landed in Vancouver at 11 o'clock because of the time. We get to the hotel, and all the players get out of the bus, and I think one of the leaders, I think it was Alexander Steen, told the bus driver, hang on, we'll be right back. All the players go up to the room, the old bag chuck, they open the door, they chuck their bags in, and they go right back to the bus. And they partied hard. I mean, this is a group that parties together, drinks together, they hang out together, meals together. If you care for each other, and this is something that is an intangible thing that I've seen so much in the league, if you care for each other, you like each other, if you have a tight group, if you do all those things, you're going to fight for each other. And I think that come playoff time, come third period where you're down by 2 goals, those are those moments where if you care about each other, that's where you look down the bench, look down this way, look down that way. I got him. He's got me. Let's go do this, boys. And this is why they just keep coming back every time because they're just such great guys and they get along so well.
I heard they even swap wives too, don't they?
I probably should get in on this one.
I want to body check something right now. I'm just so pumped up. It's just so, like I said, it's just amazing. Also, too, here's just a quick question on the way out. You know, we have had Jamie Rivers talk about this, the character of Alex Steen. Mm-hmm. We've had Chris Kerber talk about that. We've heard Alex Ferrario talk about that. We have Joey talk about that. Where did the narrative come from that dude was not a team player?
I'll tell you when it was, and at least in my brain, when it was and when it switched. When he was a forward last year, line one, line two, line three, whatever line he was on, the dude was ranked like last statistically with forwards.
Mm-hmm.
Dude makes a lot of money.
Right.
Genius puts him on the fourth line and says, go be the best fourth liner you can be. And he took his pride and went, yeah, I'm going to go do that. And he kicked ass on that fourth line.
But what I'm saying is, absolutely, I agree. But what I'm saying is where did the narrative come before that about Alex? Because by all accounts—
To me, it's just that he was making a lot of money and not doing anything.
And maybe the performance weren't there in the numbers.
I mean, I was the guy that would sit on the ratio and say, hey, man, when are we going to start charging him for ice time?
Well, and,
you know, that sort of thing.
And you guys can make fun of me, but I remember watching that Road to the Winter Classic show when Hitch was still here, and there was a scene at the end of that where they're at Busch, they're skating off the ice, and Hitch pats every player except Alex Steen. And in my head, in my whatever, I'm like, oop, oop. There's the rift. Da, da, da.
No, no,
there's
no.
The thing.
He had what are those called back there? Hemorrhoids.
Hemorrhoids. Oh,
I didn't want to
do that.
Couldn't touch him in the butt. Yeah.
It's just amazing, though, how one little thing, man, as a fan can just blow up into whatever this is in your head.
Here's another thing, too. Remember, Jamie talked me off of a roof about about Petrangelo.
Yeah.
Oh, this dude's soft. He's not a coach. And he went, hold on a second. Sit down, Jeff. Here's the thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
From out here, you don't see he's not David Backus.
Right.
He's not yelling and screaming.
Yeah.
But Rivers said he will talk to people just quietly.
Yeah, no, I think that you look at how much Alexander Steen makes, and I would almost make the argument, I think he is as valuable. I think you could actually double his salary. And I think that is how valuable he is to this team. He's old school. I mean, he grew up with the Keith Tkachuks of the world. He tips trainers heavily. He gave me a bottle of wine 2 weeks ago, huge bottle of wine. He said, hey, just want to appreciate what all you do. I mean, the care that he puts forward to people around him, he's that old school mentality, the Doug Waite, the Al McGinnises, the Brett Halls, the Chris Prongers. He's got that. You look at a player like Robert Thomas. Robert Thomas is going to be an elite player one day. I mean, he's already a stud. He's going to get even better and better and better. Tyler Bozak, Alexander Steen, these two veterans who are playing with him right now, I cannot even describe to you the conversations that these two older guys have with Robert Thomas. The grooming process, and to me this comes back to why I think he deserves more money. I mean, he's a player, he's a fourth liner. What you said was bang on about how he accepted his role on the fourth line, but he's also he's a mentor. He's a mentor to all these young kids, and you cannot put a price tag on that.
Unbelievable. Dude. Yeah. It's a good time to be a Blues fan.
Well, okay. One last thing, because I thought of it when you mentioned
his
name. I'll
edit this out.
Yeah, that's fine. that's fine. But and this is not like a super highway to end this, unfortunately, talking about somebody that I respect and liked a lot as a Blue. But over the course of the last week, David Backus, sent for assignment in Boston.
Yeah.
At this point in his career, what happens with our number 42? I still love that guy.
Yeah.
He's still one of my favorite Blues of all time. I still think one of the, like, a cruel bit of world irony was that us having to beat him of all ex-Blues in the finals last year. But I just really want it to end however David Backus wants it to end. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and it's always going to be sour for him. If I could give him any advice, it's never going to be easy. And I played with Sidney Crosby for 4 years. And Sidney...
No, Sidney played with you.
Well, that's right. That's right. Yeah, I taught him a lot. If you asked him, who do you hate playing against the most, he would always say David Backus.
Wow.
He goes, I hate that freaking number 42. He'd always say that because David Backus was a hard guy. And for reasons why you love him, this is why the Blues fans loved him. Unfortunately for David, he goes to Boston and it was the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
And in some ways, I know it sounds bad, but you really got to credit Doug Armstrong with this one. A lot of people were like, why do you let David Backus go? Doug Armstrong is so keen, not to flip this in a different direction, but he is so good at knowing when to let contracts go.
Yeah.
He has never had to buy out anyone in his whole tenure here as a St. Louis
general manager.
It's insane.
That's amazing.
He knows when to let people go. And unfortunately, I think he saw that the end coming for David Backus. Didn't quite work out for the way he wanted it in Boston. I don't know if we will see him back in Boston. I think he's got maybe one more year after this year left on the contract, making a lot of money, too.
Right.
I mean, you compare that to what Alexander Steen's doing here and how much value he brings to St. Louis versus a guy making nearly the same money as David Backus in Boston. It's pretty incredible, though.
I wish we could treat it like football can treat it. Years ago, that the center Saturday came out in an All-Star game and hiked one more time to Manning, and then went on. I wish in hockey he could come back and sign a day contract with the Blues and do a shift and skate off into the Suns. I think that'd be so badass.
But I think a lot of us, even as Blues fans, even as David Backus fans, saw the money that Boston gave him and were like,
oof. Oh, yeah, you have him. Go right ahead.
I'm sorry, but I mean, financially and fiscally responsible, man, you got
to
be.
X amount of years from now, he'll come back to the Enterprise Center. There'll be a video montage. He'll come out and drop a puck or something, and everybody will love him, and I bet you he moves back here.
Yeah, I bet. I think he'll be a coach one day.
Yeah, I agree.
I think
100%.
He's got the personality. I think he's kind of got that discipline about him. He was a captain that was I think he walked that line well. I never played with him from what I've heard, though. He walked the line well of understanding the players and being buddy buddies with players, but also understanding that you got to have a relationship with your coach and communicate that and be that middleman between them all. But I think at times maybe he leaned on the side of the coach a little bit, which probably disturbed some of the players at times, at least this is from what I've heard. But to me, I think he would make a terrific coach.
I agree. And the biggest thing I got out of this conversation is you better tell Shen that Gretzky thinks he's an amazing guy.
I cannot wait.
Oh, my gosh.
Braden better owe me dinner at least for this compliment.
Hey, so I'm talking to Gretzky. Guess who his favorite blue is?
Oh, man. You should record that.
I know. Well, I'll say it in front of Vladimir Tarasenko. Yeah, well,
this has been an absolutely great time. Joey, can we get you back at some point or the other to
Anytime.
Do this again?
You just guys need to ask. I've been waiting around all year, and finally I get a text.
1 o'clock today?
Oh, I'm busy. I'm busy today, actually. I got that thing.
Dude, the best, man. Thank you so much, man.
It's Jeff Joey Vitale from the St. Louis Blues radio broadcast, the 101 ESPN. Jeff Burton, Donnie Fandango from 105.7 The Point. Another episode of the Last Minute Blues podcast is in the books. Let's go, Blues.
The Last Minute Blues podcast. Hear more at 105.7thepoint.com.